Leo Frank's Anti-Black Attack. Incredibly, this new Frank-fostered image of Jews as crusaders for racial justice was accomplished even though there is probably no better example of Jewish racism than that shown by those Jews who fought for the exoneration of Leo Frank. In the very first World Forum, where blacks and Jews were in formal courtroom confrontation, the top Jewish leaders in America chose a particularly vicious form of racism as their chief weapon to fight for Frank. They chose a, quote, Negro testimony, end quote, quote, Negro crime, end quote, quote, smell of nigger, end quote, motif over all the formidable weapons in their intellectual arsenal, over all the Old Testament history and wisdom they were privy to, over all the cultural richness of the Jewish diaspora, over all the voluminous ancient Midrash, or rabbinical commentary on the words of the prophets. It was a shocking reminder of past black Jewish encounters at the auction blocks in Africa and throughout the Caribbean and the Americas, and unfortunately an accurate predictor of many future black Jewish disputes and interactions. In examining the trial nearly a century later, Jeffrey Melnick writes, quote, "Even if we accept that Frank had nothing to do with Mary Fagan's death, it is still necessary, for instance, to examine the ways Frank and his supporters used racist language to demean Conley and took refuge in what they understood to be the privilege of Jewish whiteness." End quote. 10 years after Leo Frank's guilty verdict and its many judicial reaffirmations, the Anti-Defamation League was unapologetically charging that a black man was guilty of the murder of Mary Fagan. Again, it reviewed the trial 30 years later, and the most prominent Jewish rights organization in America considered the Frank team's injection of, quote, the race-religious issue, end quote, into the trial as merely a, quote, calculated risk, end quote, which in, quote, a different stage setting, might well have succeeded, end quote. Over 100 years later, the Jewish leadership continues to accuse the much-maligned black man. But James Conley represented his own humanity with an inner strength and dignity that cannot easily be dismissed or diminished. Quote, "I know I will be either hanged or get a life sentence, but I am prepared to take my medicine. I wrote the notes, and I helped carry the body to the basement, and I know they can punish me for that. When the judge calls me up before him, I am going to ask him not to ask me any questions, but to simply sentence me. If it's to hang, I'll stick to my story. And if it's life imprisonment, there'll be no change. It makes no difference what the sentence is. I'll have nothing to add and nothing to take away from the statement I made to the detectives." End quote. It is that spirit which allowed him to face down the finest lawyers in the South and to withstand the focused collective assault of the world's wealthiest and most powerful people until the truth prevailed. By striking contrast, Leo Frank, the actual killer, admitted no errors, accepted no responsibility, and took no blame. The Frank case drove more white people, especially Jews, to re-examine the bestial practice of lynching. Before Frank's death, Jews generally, North and South, viewed the lynching of blacks as a useful and necessary feature of America's justice system, both tacitly and overtly supporting terror as a form of social control. But after Frank's demise, the Jewish Criterion warned its readers that lynching might be an American social policy worth reviewing. Not because black blood had been shed, but because a white Jew was thought to have also become a victim. After all, the racist editors asked, quote, "What is to prevent a white man from being lynched tomorrow? And if one white man, why not another?" End quote. Rabbi Jacob Goldstein of Frank's childhood hometown of Brooklyn declared that the Frank case, not the multitude of black lynchings, quote, "furnishes the strongest argument," end quote, against capital punishment. The black editors of the New York Age noted scathingly the overdue energy directed at stopping lynching in the United States. Now, quote, that a white man and a Jew with thousands of dollars behind his cause is the victim, there is a cry to make lynching a federal crime. As long as Negroes alone had been lynched, the whole country has been content to let the pastime continue. End quote. The Chicago Defender similarly opined in a headline, quote, strange contrast in the thousands of letters sent the governor of Georgia asking for clemency for condemned Jew and the silence that follows the lynching of an Afro-American. End quote. In the same week Leo Frank was arrested, three blacks were lynched in Georgia. And on the day of the Frank verdict, Joe McNeely, a black man, was taken from a hospital in Charlotte, North Carolina, and shot to death by a mob of whites. That same day, Virgil Swanson, accused of murder, was lynched near Greenville, South Carolina. And a few days later, someone else confessed to the crime. Some relief did come, but not, ironically, from the justice-crusading Jewish leadership. Rather, it was the leader of the Leo Frank prosecution, Hugh Dorsey, who, when he became governor of Georgia, 1917 through 1921, ultimately championed black rights. When first confronted with the horrific 1918 lynching of the pregnant Mary Turner, whose womb was ripped open and her unborn child crushed into the ground by the heel of a white man's boot, Dorsey retreated to the expedient trope that the cause of lynching was black misbehavior. And in this, he no doubt found support from Jewish leaders. In 1921, however, Dorsey had a remarkable change of view and published a groundbreaking study titled A Statement from Governor Hugh M. Dorsey as to the Negro in Georgia. It detailed 135 incidents of racial injustice, including lynching, peonage, and other crimes against blacks that had occurred over a two-year period. He wrote, quote, to me, it seems that we stand indicted as a people before the world. If the conditions indicated by these charges should continue, both God and man would justly condemn Georgia more severely than man and God have condemned Belgium and Leopold for the Congo atrocities. But worse than that condemnation would be the destruction of our civilization by the continued toleration of such cruelties in Georgia. End quote. He called for the repeal of the state's oppressive peonage law and for the enactment of the anti-lynching statutes that would give the governor powers to intervene to stop lynchings and to prosecute mob members. The NAACP considered Dorsey's stand an exciting development, because a governor from the Deep South, quote, greatly enhanced the significance of the anti-lynching crusade, end quote. Dorsey's pioneering efforts on behalf of black rights have been obscured by the historical taint applied to him by supporters of Leo Frank. Quite to the contrary, Louis Marshall, the most prominent Jewish leader in America, stood with the hardened white supremacists in opposing the 1922 Dyer anti-lynching bill, which, at his urging, went down in defeat in the U.S. Senate. Frank's impact on America. Quote, wherever there is a carcass, there the vultures will gather. End quote. Matthew 24:28. The Frank case affected other aspects of American society as well. It drew attention to the conditions facing factory girls and child laborers, and very likely hastened the reforms then underway. One of Atlanta's largest periodicals thereafter pressured, quote, every Southern legislator, end quote, who refused to vote for child labor reforms, labeling the lawmakers as, quote, potential murderers, end quote. For factory managers like Frank, who operated their businesses as self-serving heirs of the plantation slave barons, such reforms probably made their routine exploitation and sexual abuse of workers a more difficult proposition. The national reverberations of the Leo Frank case provided Jews some immediate political benefits. Less than a year after the Frank lynching, Louis Brandeis, a Jew, was nominated to the Supreme Court. According to his biographer, the Leo Frank case had sensitized people to anti-Semitism, and senators did not want their opposition to Brandeis, however soundly based, to be interpreted as prejudice. Brandeis's success offers an almost perfect example of how the false narrative of, quote, anti-Semitism, end quote, became the Jews' quote, weapon of war, end quote. The Frank case provided the Jewish elite with the smokescreen necessary to achieve their political objectives. A further benefit for Jewish leaders was that the Frank affair coincided with one of the boldest power grabs in world history, the setting up of the Federal Reserve System, the private banking conglomerate that consolidated all of the nation's financial resources into the hands of an elite set of Wall Street bankers. And, as with the Brandeis appointment, the, quote, anti-Semitic, end quote, firestorm over the Frank case, concocted as it was, served to blunt criticism about the fact that the principals in the Fed operation were Jewish. One of them, Kuhn, Loeb & Company's president, Jacob Schiff, had a clandestine personal relationship and business arrangement with Frank's savior, Georgia Governor John Slayton, an association that lasted well after the lynching. The fact is that blacks and Jews could not have seen the Leo Frank trial in the same way. Just as the interests of the slave and slave master are by nature irreconcilable, so it is with those of blacks and Jews. Once the Leo Frank case is properly contextualized, it will be seen for what it is: a masterly, century-long deception designed to maintain a highly profitable and exploitative black-Jewish slave-slave-master relationship. In the end, whoever lynched Leo Frank lynched one of their own white brethren. His crime violated the Southern Cultural Code of Conduct, having upset a delicate balance that Jews had achieved with Gentiles in America. It was the rare instance where the crime was seen as so egregious that not even the tried and true, quote, Negro crime, end quote, defense could extricate Frank from the consequences of his own misdeeds. Were it not for the white Gentiles of Georgia, in this case, at least two innocent black men would have paid with their lives, scapegoated not only to protect a prominent Jewish leader, but also to preserve the reputation of the, quote, chosen people, end quote. Truth has now caught up with history and corrected a century-old injustice perpetrated against both Mary Fagan and James Conley. Ultimately, a divine tribunal will hold America accountable for implementing and maintaining a system built on the blood, sweat, and tears of the real children of Israel, the black man and woman of America. Somewhere on the docket will be a review of the Mary Fagan murder case, at which time the travesties of the Frank affair and the crimes of all the leading figures in the case will be laid bare. But not before that tribunal hears the millions of prior cases where the brown, the black, the red, and the poor white were the innocent victims. And not before that highest of courts holds accountable the architects and beneficiaries of the very system that destroyed countless lives, including those of Mary Fagan, James Conley, and even Leo Frank. Epilogue. The mother and the stepfather of Mary Fagan write, quote, to the Honorable Thomas E. Watson. Dear Sir, as the mother and father of Mary Fagan, our poor daughter, we feel it our duty to write you a letter expressing our sincere thanks for your noble efforts in the publishing in your paper the truth about the Frank case. While we know that our advantages in life have been limited, and we are not as wise and foreseeing as some folks, we do know that we are correct in the assertion that the great daily newspapers in Atlanta and elsewhere in the state have deliberately failed and refused to speak out the truth in the Frank case concerning the tragic death of our precious little daughter. These papers, of course, have been controlled by the rich Jews who advertise in their papers, and they have not dared to publish to the world anything that was calculated to fix this crime on Leo M. Frank, where it unquestionably belongs. And in our sorrow, we feel that you are the only one that we can turn to for an expression of the truth. And we find consolation in the fact that one man, through one paper, has bravely held up for our cause and has exposed the dirty work of deception and perjury, as it has appeared all along in the progress of this case. We are sorry that our former governor, J. M. Slayton, has seen fit to override the judgment of 12 impartial, honest jurors, the judgments of the courts, both high and low, and also the judgment of the great masses of the people. We feel sorry that he should do this when we take into consideration the fact that for 2 years after his trial, not a scintilla of evidence was brought forward in his defense, although he had numerous men employed to work on the case, and all that they could bring forward was some alleged affidavits, which one of their number swore to be false. We are sorry to say, but the spirit in our souls compel us to say, that that which could not be done in front of 12 honest men, nor through the courts all the way to the United States Supreme Court, has been done by the governor of Georgia through Jew money and influence. We are sorry to say that the man whom we supported for governor of Georgia was so weak and so little to succumb to these influences, and we pray to God that Georgia shall never have another such man to sit in her executive chair. It appears to us, if Slayton thought the rich Jew, whom his partner represented, was innocent, why in the name of God didn't he free him altogether? Why should he only commute his sentence? To our minds, there was no middle ground whatsoever. We can't possibly see why a man guilty of so heinous offense should have his sentence mitigated. We both were in attendance at the trial each day. We heard the evidence. We noticed Frank's attitude and his actions all through the trial. And we know, beyond any question of a doubt, that Leo M. Frank is the guilty man. If we had any doubts as to Frank's guilt at any stage during the trial, we would have been the first to so declare. While personally we wanted the murderer of our young daughter punished, we wanted it more so for the fact that if the offender of this heinous crime was brought to sure and swift punishment, it would deter others. We had hoped that by the sure and certain punishment of Frank, that no other young Georgia girl, budding into womanhood, would die a horrible death defending her virtue against a rich, depraved, sodomite Jew. We feel that justice delayed has been justice denied. We cannot help but feel that the man, be he rich or poor, who unquestionably murdered our poor daughter, while she was defending her virtue and honesty, the principle of which we had been so careful in teaching her from childhood, should pay the death penalty. We cannot help but believe that Slayton, who, by his acts as an official, has been a traitor to the people of Georgia, a traitor to law and justice, and a traitor to the womanhood of Georgia. In conclusion, we will say that while the flowers bloom about the last resting place of our dear innocent child, and we are left to tread the balance of our life, the dreary path of sorrow, we must declare our deep feeling of gratitude to you, Mr. Watson, for your brave and patriotic attitude in this case. And it does seem to us that you, along with the fearless and noble Georgian, Hugh M. Dorsey, deserve the unlimited and everlasting admiration for your loyalty to a cause that involves the great issue between money and fair play with the common people of our state. Respectfully yours, Mr. and Mrs. J. W. Coleman. End quote. A statement about Mary Fagan. Quote, "Oh, I am so lonely without her. I never had but one sister, and she's gone. Oh God, I just feel as if I could die." End quote. Mary Fagan's older sister, Ollie Fagan, April 1913. The young murder victim at the center of this tragic episode in American history is 13-year-old Mary Fagan. She was more than a, quote, "factory girl," end quote, as many accounts contemptuously refer to her. She was a child of one of the millions of poor working families caught in a major economic upheaval in America after the demise of chattel slavery. The many academic analyses of this case have almost entirely removed the murdered girl from consideration in favor of the one person they insist is the real victim, Leo Frank. Indeed, the case became internationally notable, not out of sympathy for its young, strangled victim, but because of the prosecution and ultimate lynching of her convicted murderer. Thus, the name Mary Fagan has no historical meaning, while the name Leo Frank carries the status of national tragedy. The labeling of Mary Fagan as, quote, a factory girl, end quote, harks back to a time in American history when blacks were commonly classified as, quote, rice Negroes, end quote, or, quote, cotton Negroes, end quote, or, quote, house Negroes, end quote. Not only bought and sold as slaves, but also categorized by their sellers as having a particular lifelong manual labor obligation. In Mary's time, 50 years after slavery's demise, America's heirs of the slave system made only rhetorical alterations to that highly profitable economic model, such that, through a sophisticated debt system, a sharecropper or tenant farmer became the wholly owned property of the landholder or merchant. And an employer of young women and girls in the industrial South believed that when he hired, quote, the help, end quote, he bought his female employees. This was the operational power dynamic that resulted in the tragic death of Mary Fagan at her factory workplace. And it is that same dynamic which has misdirected the scholars of the case. And though this volume has grappled with the legal, social, racial, economic, religious, and political details of that sordid affair, we must never lose sensitivity for the suffering that young Mary experienced at the hands of her brutal murderer. It is to Mary Fagan and her family that we dedicate this volume, as well as to all the many innocents, white and black, who became victims of the circumstances and events surrounding her murder. Our conviction about the case is reflected in the title, The Lynching of a Guilty Man. But our goal has been to right a massive wrong and bring justice to an innocent young girl who one day in April 1913 sought to collect her meager pay of $1.20, never suspecting it to be the last day of her life. The Black Unforgotten, Georgia's Lynching Victims. Alex Brown, Augustus Knight, Frank Fountain, Joseph Fulford, Harry Bradley, Reuben Robinson, Lewis Warren, Lewis, Henry Jenkins, Henry White, Jeff Rogers, Hardy Grady, Willis Hardin, Samuel Gibson, Jane Wade, J.R. Dorsey, George Rouse, Thomas Brantley, Peter Stamps, John Hopkins, Henry Davis, Robert Birdsong, Aaron Birdsong, Alexander Etheridge, Jake Braswell, Mary Hollenbeck, James Moore, Daniel Odwell, unnamed black person, Thomas Israel, George Parks, Monroe Smith, W.P.F. Sanders, Samuel, unnamed black person, Reuben Hudson, Ross Griffith, Henry Burney, Thomas Roof, William Thomas, Henry Pope, Dan Sales, Alan Sturgis, Ned Clark, Sam Long, William Johnson, Lewis Edwards, Tom Smith, John Coleman, unnamed black person, Van Malone, Martin Love, Walter Asbury, Warren Powell, John Duncan, James Thomas, John Anthony, Tom Moss, Peter Jackson, William Hopps, Brown Washington. Sim Martin, Andrew Robinson, Jesse Polk, George Penn, James Harmon, General Thomas, Will Lowe, Owen Jones, John Simmons, unnamed black person, Wesley Lewis, Henry Jackson, Alan West, Daniel Buck, Robert Brown, Will Sutton, William Allen, Charles Mack, unnamed black person, Larkin Nix, Welcome Golding, Robert Knight, William West, Jim Redmond, Gus Robertson, Bob Addison, Anderson Moreland, Lee McDaniel, Benjamin Howard, John Jossi, Jesse Williams, Jack Wilson, Daniel Lewis, James Taylor, Ed, unnamed black person, Ephraim Marshall, unnamed black person, Doug Hasselton, Jack Chambers, Bill Richardson, James Dixon, Arthur Bennett, Newton Jones, William Ferguson, Calvin Thomas, Lucius Holt, Robert Collins, Sylvester Rhodes, Henry Worley, Robert Everts, Alfred Bran, Daniel Ahem, unnamed black person, Gus Thompson, Fayette Franklin, Owen Ogletree, unnamed black person, Dave Gooseby, Lee Lawrence, Samuel Taylor, Eli Frazier, Samuel Pike, Henry Sheerid, George Coldhand, Amos Gibson, George Harris, John Harris, Jesse Harris, Wesley Weaver, Neil South, Louis Jefferson, Henry Sutton, Tony Sutton, T.W. Perdue, William Hardy, Jesse Slayton, William Miles, unnamed black person, Charles Williams, Henry Milner, Sidney Grist, Anthony Henderson, Charles Forsyth Jr., Willis White, W. L. Ryder, Oscar Williams, Andrew Green, Charles Gibson, Ben Tiat, Joshua Ruff, Whit Dillard, James Allen, Richard Oliver, John Meadows, unnamed black person, McFadgen, George Burden, Edward Merriwether, Jeff Bolden, Jacob Glover, George Bivens, William Holt, George Fort, Bud Cotton, Henry Bigham, Tip Hudson, Edward Brown, League Strickland, Samuel Holt, Alfred Thurman, David Clark, Williams, Lewis Salmon, unnamed black person, unnamed black person, Bob Johnson, Monroe Clark, Charles Mack, C. Smith, unnamed black person, William McClure, Lewis Henderson, Ed Henderson, John Goolsby, unnamed black person, John Bailey, Alan Brooks, Marshall Jones, William B. Willis, Simon Adams, Jordan Hines, Rennie Jefferson, Jack Hillsman, Frank Hardiman, Bud Rufus, Ed Dodson, Sterling Thompson, George Reed, John Moody, Sherman Harris, Kennedy Gordon, William Goolsby, Billy Magruder, Frank Earl, Joe Washington, Theo Booth, Walter Allen, Henry Young, John Wise, Arthur McCauley, John Brown, William Mobley, Benjamin Brown, Lee Hall, William Fambro, Andrew Rainey, Benjamin Gorman, Garfield McCoy, George McKinney, Wiley Annette, Banjo Peavy, Edward Klaus, Unnamed Black Person, Unnamed Black Person, Arthur Thompson, John Cumming, John Jones, Paul Reed, William Cato, Sebastian McBride, James Glover, Scott, John Ware, Jack Troy, Edward Martin, Herbert Simmons, Lon J. Icock, Sandy Price, Jean Yerby, Richard Robinson, Louis Robinson, Claude Elder, Richard Allen, Robert Harris, Thomas Seabright, Augustus Goodman, Will Womack, Edward Pearson, Floyd Carmichael, Charles Fuller, William Newsom, Meta Hicks, Jet Hicks, Charles Harris, Son Padgett, Daughter Padgett, Wife Padgett, Sim Padgett, George Herbert, Doc Posey, John Walker, Henry Coley, Abe Webb, Sam Johnson, Curry Robertson, John Henry, Walter Wilkins, Albert Baker, Unnamed Black Person, Alonzo Williams, Vince Williams, Charles Loki, George Thomas, John Towns, Henry White, John Fowler, Albert Eichen, Albert Reese, Joseph Hardy, William Carricker, Henry Isaac, King Green, Simon Anderson, John Sweeney, John Harvard, Daniel Lampkin, Will Williamson, Albert Royal, Charles Jackson, Charles Wilson, Unnamed Black Person, Evan Roberts, Jim Toller, Oglesby, John Walker, William Johnson, Pearly Kurtz, Charlie Jones, John Veazey, Henry Jackson, Charles Hale, Dawson Jordan, Charles Pickett, Murray Burton, John McLeod, Benjamin Smith, Joseph Moore, Lawrence Cranford, Joe Watts, Thomas Allen, Will McGriff, Will Davis, Unnamed Black Person, Unnamed Black Person, Jerry Lovelace, Andrew Chapman, John Warren, Albert Hamilton, Belle Hathaway, Eugene Haming, John Moore, Dusty Crutchfield, Charles Powell, Homer Stewart, Homer Howell, Lee Chitwood, Henry Etheridge, Annie Barksdale, Unnamed Black Person, T.Z. McElhenney, Ed Collins, Babe Yarbrough, Unnamed Black Person, Unnamed Black Person, George McDonald, John Henry Moore, Samuel Owensby, William Redding, John Shake, Son Lovett, Virgil Swanson, General Boyd, Charles Jones, Nathan Brown, Peter Morris, Eula Barber, Ella Barber, Jesse Barber, Dan Barber, Caesar Sheffield, Samuel Stevens, Peter Jackson, Peter Jambo, Alonzo Green, Sun Green, Earl Palmer, Leo M. Frank, John Riggins, Samuel Bland, William Stewart, Felix Lake, Frank Lake, Dewey Lake, Major Lake, John Seymour, Grandison Goolsby, Mike Goolsby, Ulysses Goolsby, Hosh Jewell, Charles Holmes, James Burton, Early Hightower, Jesse McCorkle, Marvin Harris, Lewis, Moxie Schuler, Peter Hudson, Elijah Sturgis, Henry White, Mary Conley, Charles Smith, Joe Nowling, Linton Clinton, M.B. Burnett, George Butts, Clinton Chamber, Rufus Moncrief, Jesse Stater, Collins Johnson, D.C. Johnson, Mac Johnson, Claxton Declay, Bud Cosby, Spencer Evans, Eugene Rice, Hayes Turner, James Cobb, unnamed person, Mary Turner, Sam Hose, William Head, Will Thompson, Chime Riley, Simon Schumann, three unidentified men, John Calhoun, Ike Harden, John Gillum, Sandy Reeves, Sandy Reeve, Joe Ruffin Jr., William William, Willie Williams, Andrew Ruffin, James Waters, Barry Washington, Denny Richards, Benny Richards, unnamed black person, Eli Cooper, Charles Kelly, James Grant, Ernest Glenwood, Obi Cox, Eugene Hamilton, Mose Martin, William Brown, Jack Gordon, unnamed black person, unnamed black person, Paul Jones, Wallace Baines, Jack Reidiser, Charles West, Philip Gaithers, unnamed black person, Felix Creamer, John Grant, George King, Bob Whitehead, Minnie Ivory, Will Perry, William Ivory, Curly McKelvey, unnamed black person, James Rowland, Samuel Williams, John Lee Eberhardt, William Anderson, Rawls Ross, John Henry Williams, Walker Smalley, Lee Robinson Jr., George Lowe, West Hale, Wes Hale, Roy Grove, William Jones, Alfred Williams, Charlie Atkins, William Byrd, Will Byrd, Alex Byrd, Will Anderson, James Harvey, Joseph Jordan, Jake Davis, Shake Davis, John Glover, Cocky Glover, Jim Long, James Johnson, Aaron Harris, Lee Green, John Hayes, John Haynes, Beach Thrash, Penny Westmoreland, Marcus Westmoreland, Robert Smith, Willie Dixon, Willie Wilson, David Wright, Joe Lockhart, Jimmy Irving, James Irwin, S.S. Mincy, George Grant, William Kirkland, John Clark, Willie Clark, William Bryan, Lacey Mitchell. Be with us again next time when we present the next chapter of The Secret Relationship Between Blacks and Jews, Volume 3, The Leo Frank Case, The Lynching of a Guilty Man. Prepared by the Historical Research Department of the Nation of Islam, Chicago, Illinois. Copyright 2016 by Latimer Associates. All rights reserved. Published in audiobook form by the American Mercury with permission of the Historical Research Department of the Nation of Islam.